Hello, friends. This is Lauren, and this is Love Will Tear Us Apart, a podcast on your favorite complicated couples. This is episode 2, and I've been really looking forward to this one, because this one is about one of my favorite couples, Lindsay Buckingham and Stevie Nicks. Oh, yeah. So I've been obsessed with these two since I was 13 years old. Now, that's when I first saw Fleetwood Mac's The Dance on VH1. I wasn't familiar with the band at the time, but the way that Stevie and Lindsay interacted with each other during Silver Springs really got my interest. If you're unfamiliar with the song, it's got a really interesting backstory. So in 1976, Stevie had written this song about her doomed relationship with her long-term boyfriend and bandmate, Lindsay Buckingham. She had seen the name of the town, Silver Springs, Maryland, while on tour and thought that the name was beautiful. She said in an interview, "It sounded like a pretty fabulous place to me. It's a whole symbolic thing of what Lindsay could have been to me." Though Stevie had broken up with Lindsay, the song speaks to the fact that she wasn't quite over him and that his new girlfriend bothered her. Here's just one line from the song. And because I don't have rights to the songs, I'm going to sing some of the lyrics to you, okay? Bear with me. "Don't you say she's pretty? Did you say that she loves you? Baby, I don't want to know." So anyways, their bandmate Christine McVie said about Stevie and Lindsay at the time, "Lindsay was pretty down about it for a while. Then he just woke up one morning and said, 'Fuck this, I don't want to be unhappy.' And he started getting some girlfriends together. Then Stevie couldn't handle it." Stevie deeply loved the song Silver Springs and had signed over the publishing rights to her mother. So when it was cut from the band's quintessential album, Rumors, and put on a B-side, Stevie was devastated. Fast forward to 21 years later, and the song makes its debut on The Dance. I don't know if you've ever seen this footage, but it's a lot of fun to watch. Stevie turns to her ex-lover on stage and just screams, "I'll follow you down till the sound of my voice will haunt you. You'll never get away from the sound of the woman that loved you." Man, I was mesmerized. I mean, a lot of people were. The song went to the top of the charts, and Stevie and Lindsay were known for shooting daggers at one another on subsequent tours. This was something that they later admitted to kind of playing up, but the truth is, they're still fighting after over 40 years, and now they're in their early 70s. If you haven't heard, Lindsay Buckingham was kicked out of Fleetwood Mac in 2018. The story was that he wanted to push the tour a year, but the band wasn't down for it. Now, Lindsay is saying that he heard from their manager that Stevie wanted him fired because she believed he smirked while she was giving a speech at a benefit concert. In a December 2018 CBS Morning interview, this is how Lindsay explained his current relationship with Stevie. "My relationship with Stevie is fragmented. I think there is still a lot of love there. But you have to begin with the fact that in order to get through those early days, it was kind of an exercise in compartmentalization for everyone emotionally. In particular, I wasn't the one doing the leaving. She left me. But there was never really any change to get anything like closure because that takes perhaps some distance. That is kind of how we got along. And I think, you know, you cut to 20 or 30 years later, and that kind of leads to a kind of fragmented relationship. I think, you know, sometimes she might find it difficult that I was lucky enough to find my soulmate late in life and got married and had my first child at 48 and have three beautiful children, and that is something she never did. She's basically living her professional life. I don't know if that plays into it or not, I honestly don't know. So this story kind of makes Stevie look like a jerk. So I'd like to point out that there are extraordinarily damning stories about Lindsay. Like, the kind of stories, if true, make you want to burn his records and then run over them with a bulldozer. But before we get into that, let's start from the beginning, shall we? So Stevie Nicks and Lindsay Buckingham grew up in sunny, carefree Beach Boys, California in the 1950s and 60s. Both had fairly conventional and happy childhoods. Stevie was the daughter of the president of Greyhound Bus Lines, and Lindsay was the brother of a silver medal winning Olympian. Stevie initially grew up in Arizona, playing country music alongside her almost famous grandfather. Ultimately, her family found themselves in Atherton, California, which is where she'd meet Lindsay. The two went to the same high school. Stevie was a year older, but they barely knew one another. It was during this time that Lindsay co-founded the psychedelic band Fritz, and by the time he got to San Jose State, the band was pretty popular. However, they felt like something was missing. They wanted a female voice. And Lindsay recalled an attractive and talented young woman in his high school who was also attending San Jose State. So he decided to give Stevie Nicks a call. Feeling the itch to join a band, she happily agreed to join Fritz. And as the band practiced and played gigs in the Bay Area, something happened. Lindsay and Stevie started to fall in love. By 1971, the band dissolved and Stevie and Lindsay moved to LA to try their luck as a musical duo. Stevie says at that time, "I loved him before he was famous. I loved him before he was a millionaire. We were two kids out of Menlo Atherton High School. I loved him for all the right reasons. We did have a great relationship at first. I loved taking care of him and that house. I washed his jeans and embroidered stupid moons and stars on the bottom of them and made it so he was perfect." LA was hard for the young couple. Lindsay got sick for 7 months with mono, and his dad died unexpectedly of a heart attack while waiting in line to get gas during the fuel shortage. And they wrote songs during this time, but things were pretty lean. A small inheritance Lindsay received got them through a year, but Stevie later picked up a job as a waitress, earning what she could to pay rent and buy weed. Lindsay mostly didn't work. Stevie supported him while he honed his craft and smoked weed. During this time, they made their one and only solo album, Buckingham Nicks. There's a story attached to the album's cover, which iconically has the couple on the front without tops on. The story gives warning to the bully that's kind of within Buckingham. When shooting the cover, the photographer asked Buckingham and Nicks to take off their tops. The modest Nicks was horrified and protested. Lindsay snapped at her, "Don't be paranoid. Don't be a fucking child. This is art." She reluctantly took off her shirt and was embarrassed to show the album to her family. So Buckingham Nicks bombed, and it looked like the duo were running out of options. However, a chance meeting with Mick Fleetwood, from the moderately famous English band Fleetwood Mac, changed everything. Not only for Stevie and Lindsay, but also Mick Fleetwood, Christine McVie, and John McVie. At the time they all met, Fleetwood Mac was falling apart, having lost their first guitarist, Peter Green, to LSD, and their second guitarist to the cult Children of God. They decided to take a chance on this young, energetic, and beautiful couple. Lindsay wouldn't join without Stevie, and fortunately the band liked her too. This chance would change all five members' lives quickly and dramatically. Within a year, Stevie and Lindsay would go from bouncing checks to becoming ballers. And 2 years later, Fleetwood Mac became one of the most famous bands in the world. And then it was during this 2 years that their relationship would completely fall apart. So in 1975, the band recorded their first album together, the self-titled Fleetwood Mac. The songs Buckingham and Nicks contributed to the album spoke to the slow unraveling of their relationship. Stevie's iconic Landslide was written in 1974, prior to them joining Fleetwood Mac, when Lindsay abandoned Stevie in Colorado after a fight. And the song is about struggling to be successful and wanting to throw in the towel. Nicks wondered if she should give up on her dream of becoming a musician and just go back to school. She says in an interview, "I was also trying to make some decision. You know, if you see my reflection in the snow-covered hills, I was trying to figure out what I was going to do. I wasn't making it big in the music business. I was confused. Dad told me I should give it about 6 more months, and I kind of agreed with him." Buckingham's Monday Morning was also written before Fleetwood Mac. In fact, this song was written for what would have been the second Buckingham Nicks album. While I'm unable to confirm that the song is about Stevie, most Fleetwood Mac listeners believe it is. And the lyrics sound like what Lindsay and Stevie were going through during the early 70s. Here's one of the lyrics. "Monday morning, you sure look fine. Friday, I got traveling on my mind. First you love me, and then you say it's wrong. I can't go on believing for long, but you know it's true. You only want me when I get over you. First you love me, then you get on down the line. But I don't mind." The album and the tour were a huge success. So the band got to work on their next album, Rumors. Rumors would end up in the history books as one of the highest-selling albums of all time. Everyone and their mother bought this album on vinyl, and it's currently sitting on your parents' shelf next to a copy of Saturday Night Fever. By the time the band got to recording Rumors in 1976, Stevie and Lindsay were barely getting along. Nicks had broken up with Buckingham, and the married Christine and John were headed towards divorce. Stevie says at that time, "I don't even remember what the issues were. I just got to the point where I wanted to be by myself. Just wasn't good anymore. Wasn't good for either of us anymore. I'm just the one who stopped it in Sausalito, up at that little condominium. Lindsay and I were still enough together that he would come up there and sleep every once in a while. We had a terrible fight. I don't remember what about, but I remember him walking out and me saying, 'You take the car with all the stuff and I'm flying back.' And that was the end of the first 2 months of the recording of Rumors." Almost every song the three songwriters wrote for Rumors ended up being about their significant others. Stevie's songs about Lindsay are arguably some of her best. Both Dreams and Silver Springs speaks of a sad breakup, of a woman who still loves the man she broke up with, but who had no choice but to leave. In Dreams, I've always loved the lines, "It's only me who wants to wrap around your dreams, and have you any dreams you'd like to sell? Dreams of loneliness like a heartbeat drives you mad." You're probably getting so sick of this. "And the stillness of remembering what you had and what you lost." It shows how much she still missed Lindsay and how she hoped he was just as lonely as she was. I think any of us who have gone through a breakup where we still love the other person can deeply relate to what she was saying. Lindsay's songs, on the other hand, were less wistful. In his famous Go Your Own Way, Buckingham speaks of trying to do everything to make Stevie happy, and all she wanted to do was shack up with other guys. the lyric, "Packing up, shacking up is all you want to do," specifically infuriated Stevie. She said, "I very much resented him for telling the world that packing up, shacking up with different men was all I wanted to do. He knew it wasn't true. It was just an angry thing that he said. Every time those words would come on stage, I wanted to go over and kill him. He knew it, so he really pushed my buttons through that. It was like, I'll make you suffer for leaving me. And I did." Lindsay was pretty devastated by the breakup, but he soon began dating sound assistant Carol Ann Harris, a woman he would be with for the next 8 years. Even though Lindsay seemed to have moved on, that didn't stop him from having awkward and angst-filled interactions with Stevie. To put it bluntly, Lindsay was mad at Stevie. Mad that she broke his heart. Mad that he had brought her into the band and she was becoming more famous than he was. Mad that he had to help produce her songs. He openly mocked her and he was sarcastic and hard on her in the studio. A behavior that apparently continued for decades. During this time, the entire band was getting heavily into drugs, primarily cocaine, and weed and alcohol, too. This cocktail didn't help alleviate any emotional tension that existed amongst its members, particularly Stevie and Lindsay. However, there's a story regarding that famous Rolling Stone cover, the one where they're all lying in bed. The story goes that Lindsay and Stevie hung around after the shoot was done and had some fun. Maybe it was the drugs. Maybe it was unresolved feelings, but it led to nothing more, and their growing resentment towards one another continued to fester. Rumors was huge, like mega huge. To this day, it is still one of the best-selling albums of all time, and it took the members of Fleetwood Mac to a whole new level of fame, money, and insanity. By the end of the Rumors tour, the band had more money than they knew what to do with. And they spent most of it on new houses, new cars, luxury vacations, and a whole lot of drugs. So when it came time to start working on their next album, Tusk, everyone was pretty strung out. Stevie had started sleeping with Mick, who was married to model Jenny Boyd, who was also the mother of his two daughters. Mick was terrified of telling Lindsay that he was sleeping with Stevie, but when he told him, Lindsay was pretty ambivalent. Tusk was a huge undertaking, and everyone wanted Rumors Part 2, but Lindsay refused to do it. He was inspired by new bands at the time, like Talking Heads, The Clash, and the Sex Pistols, and he wanted his own music to sound edgier. So he said he wouldn't do Tusk unless he performed his own songs and he could produce the entire album. The double album was considered a flop at the time, but now it's a classic. It's certainly an odd mix of songs. Christine contributed her old, reliable melodies that are easy to sing along to. Stevie added a bunch of sad, cocaine-induced songs about missing Mick. And Lindsay made a bunch of punk-inspired weirdness that he partially recorded on his bathroom floor. Side note, I love Tusk. Tusk is by far my favorite Fleetwood Mac album. It's really moody and dark, and it's pretty evident that the band was strung out, and I just love that it was a great window into this really dark time for the band. Stevie's and Lindsay's lyrics on Tusk had moved on to their new paramours, Mick and Don Henley for Stevie and Carol Ann for Lindsay, but there's still this theory that a couple songs are about each other. Take, for example, "What Makes You Think You're the One" by Lindsay. Lindsay says it's a song about no one in particular, but with lyrics such as, "What makes you think I'm the one who will love you forever? Everything you do has been done, and this won't last forever." Kind of makes you wonder, right? I mean, it's no secret that Lindsay was resentful of Stevie's rise to fame, considering he brought her into the band. And he really resented being the one who had to help her produce her songs. Another song is The Ledge, which Rolling Stone says is a thinly veiled song about Stevie. In typical Lindsay fashion, the song is pretty biting. Some of the lyrics go, Counting on my fingers, counting on my toes, slipping through your fingers, watching how it grows. You can love me, baby, but you can't walk out. Someone ought to tell you what it's really all about. And another line is, you're never going to make it, baby. You're never going to make it, babe. Make it, babe. Make it, baby. Lindsay was not a strong lyricist. During the Tusk tour, things got really, really weird. Lindsay had been having health issues for the past couple of years, seizures specifically, and he would get really wasted night after night. On one fateful night at a show in Auckland, New Zealand, Lindsay began mocking Stevie on stage, and he even tried to hurt her. Stevie recalls in an interview, "We all think back to our trip to New Zealand. It's an amazing story. It was the fight of all fights. And I think there was 30,000 people there that had come from buses all around New Zealand to see us. We were on the last song of the set, and Lindsay threw his Les Paul guitar at me. I ducked so it didn't hit me, but I was so mad that he endangered my life. He then stormed off the stage, and we all stormed off the stage after him. The bodyguards and everyone had to physically separate us all, and we didn't do an encore that night. And that is the first and only time we have not done an encore. He was mad at me probably because it was okay for me to be the performer that I was when we were a couple, but when we broke up, he hated the fact that I was such a lead singer. And I'm sure when we left New Zealand, we were not even on the same plane." After that fateful show, Christine stormed backstage and slapped Lindsay right across the face because Christine McVie is a freaking badass. In interviews, Lindsay has either feigned ignorance or laughed off his craziness at that New Zealand show. In Mojo magazine, he said, "Oh, I wouldn't doubt that I had mimicked Stevie on stage and kicked her. That could have happened too." It was also in New Zealand when Lindsay physically attacked his girlfriend, Carol Ann. According to her memoir, Storms, Lindsay was controlling, and she endured years of physical and emotional abuse. It's a tragic story that I believe is true, because years later, Lindsay would choke Stevie too. We'll dive more into the story in the second part of this episode. I hope you'll tune in. This episode was written by me, sound design by Jonathan Luna, and the music was written by Michael Groner.